Okay, we're going to reconvene the Story County Commissioners meeting.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah.
Well, I shut them up.
You just hit your volume on the side. That'll usually stop it.
I've got it down.
I mean, if you just push the side button, sometimes it'll turn it off. Okay, let's see here. We've already heard item number 12, so we're going to move along to item number 13. This is discussion and possible action, the approval of the continuation of the residential construction tax for Story County Schools.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased to introduce to you a fresh new face, Story County School District's business and office manager, Patty Lamb, and she's going to walk you through. I want to stress this is a continuation of a tax that's long been in effect as it pertains to new residential construction.
Well, thank you, commissioners and board members. Story County School District would like to ask for the continuation of the construction tax. Those funds can help us do some road repaving, replace some overhead lighting. It can just help contribute to funding those projects.
So this tax is collected, simply goes into your general fund?
Yes.
Okay.
And I believe, Mr. Chairman, that we assess that as part of the building permitting process and then remit to the district for a treasurer.
Yeah. And I think it goes way back, too.
Yes, sir.
This has been in existence for a long time.
Yes, sir. And it is countywide.
And this is only on residences?
Correct.
Yes.
You have any questions, Commissioner Gilman?
I don't. I think it's good for the friends.
Okay. Is there any questions from the audience? Any discussion? Hearing none, this is pretty routine, so I'll call for a motion for approval of continuation of the residential construction tax for Story County Schools. And I'll second that. And moved and second to approve the continuation of the construction tax. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Lamb, for attending today.
Thanks, Patty.
And now we're going to move along to item number 14. This is discussion of possible action, National Radon Month Proclamation.
Good morning again, Commissioner. Sherry Nevin for the record. January is National Radon Action Awareness Month, and the University of Nevada Reno Cooperative Extension Program encourages communities to comprehend the dangers of radon by issuing a proclamation and providing educational materials. Today we have with us Susan and Jamie from the Cooperative Extension Office, and they're going to give a little bit of information on their radon program, and then I will go ahead and read the proclamation if you so desire, and that will conclude our item.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Commissioners, for allowing us this time to give you some information about radon. This proclamation and your support of our service to this area is especially important because radon is the leading cause of lung cancer among non-smokers. Radon is a naturally occurring radioactive, colorless, odorless, tasteless gas, and therefore there's no one to blame because it's natural and we can't see it or sense it with our sight or smell, so we don't know it's there. It can accumulate in houses and can cause lung cancer, killing an estimated 21,000 people a year in the United States. According to experts, living in a home with radon concentrations at the EPA action level, which is not a safe level, poses as much risk of developing lung cancer as smoking half a pack of cigarettes a day. But radon-caused lung cancer is preventable because a simple 3-day test can determine if a house has a radon problem. And if radon problems are found, they can be fixed. Now, EPA has designated January as National Radon Action Month across the nation. And state radon programs like ours are educating citizens about the health risk of radon gas in their homes. In this area, we will be presenting a program at the Carson City Senior Center on January 27th at 6 p.m. Free radon test kits will be available then, and they are also available at the Cooperative Extension Office at 2621 Northgate Lane, Suite 15, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5. In Story County, our current statistics show that out of 19 valid test results, 7 of them had a radon problem. That amounts to 37%. However, we need more testing done in this county because only 19 results. And if anybody has tested their home more than 2 years ago, EPA recommends testing every 2 years. So if anyone here would like a test kit, we do have test kits today, or you can call our office at 888-RADON-10 or visit our website and get a test kit. We can mail them if you can't make it to our office. And we appreciate this opportunity that you've given us. And we gave you a special gift today. It's a coffee mug. It's got thermochromatic sublimation. And when you fill it up with hot liquid, a message appears. So we appreciate this opportunity. And
thank you. Do you have any questions, Mr. Gilbert?
I believe, didn't we do a proclamation last year, so this was a renew of that, Sherry?
That is correct.
I remember last year.
We did not do one last year. We've done it in the past, yes, I believe.
Joanne
Skelly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the county manager has a couple of questions for you from Commissioner McGuffey, who excused himself.
And I think he answered these. I just would like the audience and the press and everybody to be clear. You mentioned that county residents wishing to test countywide can contact your office through that number, 1-888-RADON-10, correct?
Correct.
Okay. He also asked what is the cost, and there is no cost, correct?
There is no cost until February 28th because we're giving them out free in recognition of National Radon Action Month. However, after February 28th, they are $7.
Okay. Okay. And his third question was, if we got countywide participation, would you discount? So would you pay us if the cost is zero? No, just kidding. We're good.
The question I have of the Story County residents who participated, those that tested positive radon, can you tell us what locations they were in? Can you tell them what district?
Only in zip code 89440. And I know there's other zip codes that come into Story County because radon doesn't know any geopolitical zones, but that particular detail is just for 89440, which is a large area. We only know the results by zip code.
Okay.
Yeah, because we've got three other areas in our county that are served by zip codes in other counties. So.
Right.
We may be able to maybe work with your office and see based on addressing.
But if they're testing positive in the 89440 zip code, it's pretty good chance it's Virginia City Gold Hill because the other outlying districts don't use that zip code.
And a suggestion to you in terms of future years, if you're going to continue to track by zip code, which is understandable, we'd suggest that you look at systems. Potential systems changes to track on ZIP plus 4. I'm looking at one of our members out in our audience that helped me several months back make some purchases of some items, and she lives in the Steamboat South Reno ZIP code. But when she successfully loaded in her plus 4 ZIP code, it targeted back into Story County despite that issue.
So the problem is privacy laws and or privacy issues that we don't want to get into pinpointing specific areas either. So that's why we do it by zip code.
It's going to have an economic impact on a home that tests positive and for the salability, and so I understand why there needs to be some.
Well, if it is found in a home, then the owner has the option of fixing that home or not. It's totally voluntary. There's no law that says they have to fix it. Nobody's going to come knocking at their door. If a house is fixed for radon, that is a total marketing plus, especially in areas of high radon areas. And it's saving their lives while they're living in it if they're thinking of selling.
Can you give kind of a brief executive overview of what is a fix to a radon issue in a home?
Well, a fix is called radon mitigation. And there's several types of radon mitigation depending on the foundation of your home. So if you have a crawl space foundation, they build a sub-membrane over the dirt by sealing the polyethylene sheeting to the sidewalls of the foundation and sealing any
seams.
And then they put a drainage pipe under there and a piping system connected to a fan. And that fan draws on the soil gas underneath the sheeting 24 hours a day, draws that gas up and away from getting into the house. And for a slab or basement foundation, they drill a 3 to 4 inch diameter hole and attach a pump piping system to that with a fan. So it is fixable. It is a minor home repair.
And I think it's important to mention also that homeowners can fix it themselves. We do have a do-it-yourself book that we provide free at local libraries, and homeowners can look at that and fix it themselves, or else they can go through a mitigator to fix it.
It's my understanding that a remediation on this isn't that expensive of a project on a residential house.
Mm-hmm. It really depends upon the square footage of the house as to the cost, but crawl space systems do cost more because there's more labor involved in it.
And you're hooked up to a fan that has to run in perpetuity for the life of the house?
It should, yes. Mm. And the fans are really guaranteed for at least 5 years, but they run a lot longer than that.
Mm-hmm. And it only takes about as much energy to run one of those fans as a 60-watt light bulb. So very low energy.
Very good. Would you like Sherry to read the proclamation?
I'm ready to read. Yes, please read the proclamation.
Would you like me to read it out?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll do my best here. It's a long one. Proclamation by Story County declaring January as National Radon Action Month. Whereas many Story County residents don't know about radon, yet need to know for the safety and well-being of their families, as radon is a colorless, odorless, naturally occurring radioactive gas that is the leading cause of lung cancer among non-smokers. And whereas the U.S. EPA estimates 21,000 people in the U.S. die each year from lung cancer caused by indoor radon exposure, and lung and bronchial cancer kills more people in a year than any other cancer, and whereas radon kills more people than secondhand smoke, drunken driving, falls in the home, drowning, or home fires, and whereas any home in Story County may have elevated levels of radon, even if neighboring homes do not, and living in a home with an average radon level of 4
picocuries
per liter of air poses a similar risk of developing lung cancer as smoking half a pack of cigarettes a day, and whereas testing is the only way to know if a radon problem exists, that testing is easy and is inexpensive, and when identified, the problem can be fixed. And whereas University of Nevada Cooperative Extension, the Nevada Division of Public and Behavioral Health, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency support efforts to encourage all Story County residents to test their homes for radon, mitigate elevated levels of radon, and have new homes built with radon-reducing materials and features. Now, therefore, you, the Story County Commissioners, do hereby proclaim January 2015 as National Radon Action Month in Story County, Nevada.
Very good. Well done. That being said, looking for a motion, approval.
I move to proclaim January 2015 as National Radon Action Month in Story County.
And I'll second your motion. Been moved to second to approve National Action Radon Month. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion carries. Susan, Jamie, thank you for coming up today. Sorry it took so long to get to here.
Okay. Can we get a quick photo of you?
Heck yeah.
So they can share that. We'll share it on the socials and we'll share it on the They will be signing it.
Yeah. More footage.
There's a good price. Right here, that is you.
That is it. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Have a nice afternoon.
Thank you.
Good to have you guys. Okay. We've continued item number 15 to February the 3rd, 10 a.m. in this room. This was the
mitigation.
That's just continued at this stage. We don't have to do date specific. It's not a posting issue, so
okay.
We just have to get the drafts.
All right, very good. It's been continued to a future date. We've already heard item number 16. Now we're going to hear item number 17. This is discussion and possible action, the approval of the auditor's recommendations pertaining to Story County Audit Report for the period ending June 30th, 2014. Mr. Gallagher, going to take care of this one?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. We have before you the auditor's report on current year's recommendations. There are nine of them, and I will go briefly through that. The first item was we recommended monitoring expenses to prevent exceeding budgeted amounts as expenditures exceeded appropriations in five special revenue fund. Three special revenue funds had a deficit fund balance. Our first one is our fire special revenue fund expenditures exceeded appropriations by $30,392 due mostly to unemployment compensation, which amounted to approximately $17,000 of unbudgeted expense, and automobile-related maintenance and operational costs of approximately $20,000. The unemployment compensation expense is attributed to seasonal employees, which we really didn't think were covered in the past, never budgeted in the past. They said subsequently this is not the case now. And the repairs were due to, obviously, our ambulance fleet, which kept blowing engines and all kinds of things, which the chief had to get repaired, which should solve itself by the purchase of our three new, brand-new ambulances, not fire engines, but ambulances. We should take care of that problem. Our second special revenue fund is the mutual aid special revenue fund, which was established in 2014 to account for all revenues and expenditures outside the 474 Fire District. Although expenditures exceeded appropriations by $131,960, revenues exceeded budgeted amounts by $131,501. It's hard to budget this account because we don't know what Gary's going to do on outside the 474 Fire District, but this is one of those pass-through accounts that we created a couple of years ago because the fire fund, the 474 district, was always out in every area because of all of the BLM-type services that Gary provides outside the 474 district, but that he bills back to BLM. And usually by the time we have done an augmentation in March or April, a lot of those fires don't happen until late May, June, and so we don't have a chance to augment that stuff in. So we created the mutual aid fund to take care of all of those expenses and the revenues for anything outside the 474 Fire District, and so far it's worked very well. So this budget season we'll try and be a little bit better to make sure that the expenditures at least coincide with what the budgeted amounts are. Our third one is the Sheriff Jail Special Revenue Fund, which exceeded appropriations by $14,820. The sheriff has given you a document for your review, and it's the short of it was probably due to when we went through the budget year in March of last year. The sheriff came up with an idea to staff the jail with correctional officers instead of post-certified deputies, which I thought was a good idea. So we set in motion that at that point in time the budget would include those correctional officers that were approved, and we would accommodate the actual expense based upon that. In fact, that has happened, but it has taken some time to do that. Understanding the first one was probably hired in July 7th, but the last one wasn't hired until about January or February of this year. That length of time that it took to get those people on board actually was about $10 an hour for every hour worked, because we still had to have a deputy on site with that. I'm pretty sure that we have corrected that. This is pretty much where that was at that point in time, and that's, you know, the fact that we didn't allow for some appropriations for transformation, because in my estimation, I thought everything would have been transformed by July 1st. It was not. It didn't happen actually until late February, until all the team got to place. So that was the reason for that over-budgeted item. The next item was the Tri-Payback Fund, Special Revenue Fund, exceeded appropriations by $329,000 due to additional expenditures for property taxes paid in lieu of direct payment. Budget amounts in the future will reflect the increased activity in Industrial Park, and it's pretty much anybody's guess how we're going to the payment to our public-private partner, but certainly we're going to take a long look at that and put enough money in there on the budget side so that any expenditures that we incur during that fiscal year will be well within the budget. Equipment Acquisition Special Revenue Fund exceeded appropriations by $7,760, which was mainly due to the excess expenditures for the reconstruction of a water tender. This overage could have been augmented due to higher than anticipated revenues, but again, those revenues weren't recognized until after the augmentation process happened, so consequently this note had to come from the auditor as far as the expenditure was concerned. I will say on items one where we have these expenditures over the appropriated budget amount that we take a different stand than most counties do because of the commission and with Mr. Gilman's direction that we go with the theory and of line item budgeting and things of that nature. We do not budget a ton of money for people. So consequently, if you have an event, you're going to be over budget, but it's explainable. And I would rather have it explainable than, you know, put a bunch big in there and a bunch of fat in the budget that says, well, you know, I'm clean and whatever, because only bad things happen when that happens. So I think we're doing a great job by doing this. I want to stay down this road, and that in each and every one of these cases it is explainable, and it will be explainable to the Department of Taxation. And I would rather go along with that theory rather than to bump somebody's budget up 10 or 15% just because we don't know what the norm is going to be. So that is my recommendation. Item two is we recommend more care be taken in recording cash receipts. There were numerous instances where revenues were receipted into incorrect cash accounts. This comes from, you know, everybody brings in all of their receipts daily, which is should have a proper account number on those. Sometimes that does not happen. And so consequently, things get awry. We try and take a look at this. We try and get with the department heads to make sure that the proper revenue, in addition to the proper expense item, has gotten into the proper account. Sometimes this happens, and we are constantly trying to give this. It's one of those things. If you have one instance, they're going to put it in the report. There was not very many of these. However, we still try to keep this going, and I think we'll try and get with the department heads to make sure that those accounts that they're going to put that in really should be the proper account. The other side of a lot of this has a lot to do with the existence between in reconciliation of that between Bank of America and Wells Fargo. Since we are no longer with Bank of America and we're now with Wells Fargo, I'm fairly confident that you know, a lot of this will go away. Our third item is based upon amount of expenditures exceeded appropriations in almost every category. The fire and sheriff special revenue funds, we recommend expenditures over $10,000 be approved by the county manager and comptroller. For every capital expenditure over $1,500, requires the signature of County Manager Whitten and myself. If we go further down the line and think that this is needed, we may do this for every single line item. I would hate to restrict Chief Ames and Sheriff Antonoro on this, but we'll go with this and see what happens. I think our $1,500 capital expense expenditure form is adequate, and we'll look at the other things as we go on, and if it starts expanding that way, then we may require that. Our item number four is continued care should be taken in the assignment of funds and account numbers prior to recording the liabilities in the accounting records. Certain expenditures appear to be more correctly charged to a special revenue fund than the general fund. This has been and will continue to be a very concerted effort to expense charges to the appropriate account number and fund. We have been very consistent in identifying these expenditures in the past, which are direct expenses of other than general fund expenditures, and adjust those expenditures to the proper funds and accounts as needed. In a lot of instances, the general fund may appropriate or may have an expenditure that belongs to another fund. This, through our review process, sometimes if it was just a mistake or they needed to do something on an emergency basis, we'll go ahead and move that into the other fund and not the general fund. Item five is we recommend account names in federal state grant funding be reviewed and adjusted for further differentiate to further differentiate federal and state grant revenue funds and expenditures. We have taken great strides in identifying these federal and state, which, by the way, normally we don't know in the beginning whether it's a federal or a state grant fund. It may start out to be a federal and all of a sudden be moved into a state fund or vice versa. But continued internal audits by myself and the diligent work by Sherry Nevin will provide on a quarterly basis, proper accounting distribution between the various grants. We will need to educate those funds that operate as separate local governments that their responsibility is to accurately define from federal and state grants. And this is probably where we had a little bit of a disconnect, is because there were a couple of funds that were from other local governments that were incorporated in our federal grant and stuff for the county that were earmarked incorrectly. Item six, we recommend adjusting beginning cash balances at July 1st, 2014, either through loans or transfer in order to eliminate the deficit cash balances in the fire and jail building funds. I do recommend that loans from the general fund to the fire and jail building funds be accomplished with repayment made by the end of the current year. However, the jail fund deficit, since there's no longer a jail fund, that deficit will be absorbed by the general fund. The fire fund will not at this time need a loan due to an infusion of building permit revenue transferred from the general revenue to the fire fund for inspections performed between 2010 and 2014. Up until 2010, Chief Haynes' fire department got a portion of those building permits based upon a percentage, which was his work that he did in order to get that building permit for that particular property. Dean Haymer collected it, and Gary Haynes got credit for it. Somewhere between 2010 and 2014, this didn't happen. So I would be remiss if I didn't go back and give Chief Haynes credit for those building permits in which he spent time on. And now future permitting, hopefully now will be done by Chief Haynes giving Dean Haymer a bill like he does BLM for his permitting expenses. And I agree wholeheartedly with County Manager Whitten that we do not need to have two bills go out to a client. I think that that we don't need that. We can handle this internally. And so consequently, Chief Ames will get the appropriate amount of revenue from those billing permits that he is due. So consequently, this negative ending fund balance or negative cash balance should disappear in the future.
Part of that also extends over to business licenses, does it not, in terms of the annual inspections?
Right. And we have not gotten a point of that to where that is, but that is also going to come to effect.
Right.
Yes. Let's see. Item 7, we recommend more care be taken in recording journal entries as we found numerous duplicate entries. The journal entries in question were resolved from other departments or separate local governments within Story County requesting reclassification from one account to another. Additional care will be taken to ensure that the reclassification is, number one, correct, and additional documentation will be required to support the journal entry. Usually when we do these quarterly financial statements, our department heads look at their reports and say, you know, this account is over budget. And I don't know why this account should have been, or this invoice should have been charged to this account versus that account. We have been accommodating in the past to do that. We had a couple that, you know, one got put in twice, and that's what they got caught. This was then reversed and corrected. But that's still something that we need to take a look at in the future. We recommend, item 8 is we recommend double-checking accounts after June release have been made to ensure that the correct amounts have been affected and the correct amounts have been recorded in each item. After each journal entry you made, each account affected by the journal entry will be printed as part of the entry documentation, and this would have solved the problem. Had we printed out that account, we would have seen that it was put in there twice, and this will now happen to rectify some of those problems in the past. And item 9, we recommend a cutoff date of August 15th to establish and strictly enforce all payables, receivables, and journal entries from any government employee to prevent complications with the audit. We concur with this recommendation. In the past, we have been very consistent in applying the principle that anything ordered and received in one fiscal year is paid is part of that fiscal year. It has come to our attention, however, that expenditures are being made to use up budgetary amounts and are not necessarily targeted for the current fiscal year, but for the next fiscal year. We will be very diligent and review these invoices during this last quarter of each fiscal year and determine the necessary necessity for that expenditure. And that concludes my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Any questions on this, Commissioner?
Some comments. I appreciate you very much the focus on our auditor's recommendations. Remembering back last year, we went through a similar set of recommendations from our auditors. And in the recap of this year, it appeared that we made marginal progress on a lot of those recommendations. And so it would be my take on this that although we're being asked to approve their recommendations, and I wholeheartedly agree, I muse on maybe it would be prudent or perhaps productive as you went through the 9 points. It appears that there's some confusion on some of those points as to can we actually address their recommendations or could we perform those recommendations based upon their analysis. And I wonder if that might be worth, at least for me, a follow-up with them and where you present the challenge that we have here in the county and get a response from them on those few items, and I don't have a selected group, but on those items whereby we have a particular challenge within our system, let them know that and get a response from them one way or the other so we're consistent in the future. In the year, we're going to revisit these recommendations, and I would hope that we get a better scorecard than we got off of the recommendations from last year. And that's just kind of a personal overview. I realize that in our systems and with theirs, there can be a disagreement on how we all do them. But I'd like to hear your response to them and their response back into some of those areas that we really are not in a position to produce.
No, absolutely. And if we look at the auditor's report on prior year's recommendation, they always say, well, partially. Well,
yes.
Partially is because they didn't start the audit until the following year. So, you know, from they had their thing on October 31st of this year. If they find something in July of August of last year or of last year.
For me, that was misleading because I didn't like the report card.
And they still have to, they say partially because it's been corrected since the audit report, but it wasn't reported, it wasn't fixed or it wasn't even reported on in July or August, September of last year, so we didn't know about it, so then they just say, well, it's partially. So I'll get with them, and I'll get all of this stuff straightened out.
I'd really appreciate that. Some feedback from them and from you. And
absolutely.
So we're on a really strong, clean track.
Got it.
And if I could, Mr. Chairman, I mean, I've dealt with these recommendations for years, and keep in mind, please, that they are indeed recommendations.
I understand.
It's like, in some cases, no disrespect to Ann, but it's legal counsel. And I think, you know, Hugh's giving us the standard simple answer when it's much more difficult than that. I mean, to recommend year over year that we institute a $10,000 threshold that require my approval and Hugh's approval when we're already at $1,500. You know, I'm going to tell you, I'm looking at the two guys who they don't get the luxury in the jail fund or nor in the district fund of having the general fund that spins off these added monies that we can augment in. We knew about each and every one of those expenses. We knew we were slow coming out of the chute and probably didn't structure our budgets correctly when it came to staffing the jail. So, you know, and in the fire case, you know, each and every one of those, Gary sat down with both of us, and I'm sure others, probably Jesse included, you know, and said, I got to fix an ambulance. What are we going to do? So some of these are just the nature of the beast, and they're going to reoccur. And then the other ones, you know, the double entries on the journals and stuff, yeah, that stuff we have addressed and we need to continue to make sure because that's plagued us before.
No, I agree. Just from general concept, the budget and the line items and the expenditure of county monies are specifically the responsibility by NRS statute of the commissioners individually. And so I think that we need to do whatever we can possible to make sure that the commissioners are on the high road and aware of what's happening, and are certainly a part and parcel of the approvals.
Absolutely. And from the audit report from the last meeting, we have a nice clean audit. And the nine recommendations in here, these are all well and good with your experience and mine with audits.
Yep.
Auditors, that their job is tasked with finding something, whether it's no matter who the inspector is, whether the health department, gaming, liquor, they're always going to find something, and it was their job to find some things. And most of these items in here are simply clerical. And everybody can go ahead and put the wrong code for the chart of account in there, and it's easily remedied when they find out and then reverse it. We talked about earlier about the vehicle breakdowns. I don't know. As the comptroller indicated, it's better to go ahead and come back and make an adjustment later on than to go ahead and set up a bloated contingency fund there for stuff that that you don't know if it ever will happen. If I'm correct, even on the jail fund, I believe that they were under budget enough on the sheriff's side that it was a wash anyway from the jail side. So, in essence, that's a moot.
Yep.
So, the funding was there. Nobody's really out of balance, and these are just little gotchas in here that
they have to.
So anyway, I think it's a pretty clean audit.
And I want to be really clear, particularly now that we're into almost February with only 5 months left in the current fiscal year. Be prepared for some, not all of these, but some similar occurrences to show up even in next year's. I'm going to look again at Chief Hames and know I authorized, as did Hugh and as did Austin, authorized him hiring Fritz Klingler, you know, as a fire and life safety guy to facilitate permitting, particularly out in the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. Technically right now, if we don't find the avenues to augment him, he's going to be over budget by a substantial amount. Same in Dean's office with building. Fortunately, we usually are able to, well, we know we can augment this year for Chris. But, you know, and I'm not certainly not being argumentative, but I think, you know, we know we set a budget as well as we can no later than the third Monday in May right now at the latest. And then stuff like Tesla happens. That wasn't on the radar screen the third Monday of May of 2014. So, you know, it's, like I said, it's kind of the nature of local government.
Business. Listen, I don't disagree with that at all, but that's one of the reasons that we set up a review from the departments.
Yeah.
And we're to do that once a month on the second meeting. And that's why a department who is over budget on a line item can come in and merely report that they had an issue and they had a breakdown, or we had a Tesla, or we had something along those lines. So we're all on the same page as we go along, and we don't find it at the end of the year. We find it by the month as we move forward, and we look at our line items.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Does anyone else have any discussion on this item? Ms. Bard, you had your hand up first.
Bard.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. Lance, you're right. I mean, there are carryovers from the last, and I agree with you, there are carryovers from the last audit to this audit, and if memory serves, there have been consistent carryovers even from prior audits. No doubt the budget process has improved thanks to your leadership, so I think that's good stuff. But what I'd like to ask is, to the extent that, you know, many of these things have carried over and have been the same from audit to audit to audit despite improvements. They seem to be systemic. I mean, a lot of what I read here is either lack of training or things just not getting done or whatever. A couple of things. We're getting bigger and more complex per what your statements during board comments. Little things will turn into big things and turn into big uh-ohs. So my question here is, we're going to get bigger, we're going to get more complex. These little administrative things, as you call them, aren't going to remain little administrative with more stuff coming at you with all these companies, et cetera. So my question is, you know, are we getting big enough to look at a different structure for how the comptroller is set up or how we do finances. I mean, do we need an internal audit function, even on a part-time basis, to help identify, if not divert, some of these issues as they go up? I think the monthly meetings are exactly what, you know, any rational business does to make sure that you don't have any surprises. But I'm taking a step back, looking at a larger systemic picture. When things change, small, and you've got a small structure, you can handle it. But we've got big changes coming. The structures that we have and the processes that we have may not, and I would venture to say will not, be able to handle that without us looking at, anticipating it, looking at the way we're structured and saying, can we, looking the way, dressed the way I am today, can I handle a real winner next week? No, I cannot. And if that real winner is going to be here for the next 2 years, I better get a new wardrobe. So my question is, we've had the same issues, little as we've been, happening each audit. Now we're going to start getting bigger. I think now's the time to cut the head off that snake, fix it, by asking some process questions, some structural and organizational questions on, you know, how do we avoid this, and then how do we also position ourselves to get bigger faster? I don't know that we're structured right to do that.
My general response would be, and this is from a general basis, we actually started really looking at line item budgeting about a year ago. And I think that our staff and our departments are learning and going through that transition. And so we've seen 1 year now of results. And my thought for you would be, we are doing that. I think we're reviewing things as a county. Certainly the county manager and our comptroller amended some of the procedures that are followed already. And so I think through a natural course of business and analysis, we're seeing some of that right now today.
Yeah, but one here, that, well, a number of them are, you know, yeah, but the cash receipts, that's a from an audit standpoint, that's a red flag, because that's cash handling. And I don't know how we're structured. I don't know if each department collects cash and all of that. But from an auditor's standpoint, they like as few points of contact with cash as possible. And we're small enough, I think, to be able to walk something from here to there. But as those cash amounts get larger, I don't know what the structure under number two looks like on what we do. But again, an auditor's worst nightmare is many hands touching cash or taking money in, whether it's cash or otherwise. So it's that kind of questioning on process or structure that I'm talking about. You understand that you run a business, you run through these audits. I'm just raising the question of, you know, some of this may be avoided by an internal audit function, I don't know. But just putting it out there. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to comment on Nicole's last comment, and really it's not about the internal audit function as far as whether the cash got there. I think our internal audit function and the procedures that we have in handling cash and cash handling procedures are fine. It's about the recording of that. For example, if you have multiple permits or licenses or whatever, and something gets put into the license revenue column instead of the permit column, those are the types of things that they'll look at. I mean, that starts from the department level. An internal auditor certainly will catch maybe some of that through some testing if they find it. But a lot of this stuff is like, all they need to do is find one instance, whether it was corrected or not, and it's automatic. It's one of these automatic things that unfortunately auditors have to put out there. I am going to talk to our auditors and say, you know, really, what, you know, where is the significance of all this? I'm going to ask them in the future, how many items did you uncover? Because we really don't know that right now. But I think that we have to put a lot of emphasis on what we do. The clerk's treasurer's office tries to catch it. The department heads and myself try to catch it when the monthlies come out. Sometimes that slips through. But the fact of the cash not getting to the bank, I think our procedures, our cash handling procedures, are
more than adequate, or that would have been addressed as part of an internal audit function by our external auditor. So I'll leave that where it's at.
And I'd like to point out for a minute, and our current comptroller structure, I'm not actually not only taking exception to what you say, I would agree in certain areas, specific when you nail them like you do. The $10,000 versus $1,500, to me, I'm going to guarantee everybody that's going to be on there again next year. It's going to be on there every year, but we know about it, and he has to call us on it, and it's done. As far as internal auditing, let's talk about what our current comptroller's office is structured. We essentially have a very highly skilled one person that I don't even think she's full-time. Is she? Is she 35? The 35 hours that handles all the county's payables and all the county payroll. And that's on a biweekly basis. And then we have a comptroller, and that's it. We have, on an ongoing basis, and we always do this, but we do it more intensely as we approach our budget year. We sit back and we say, okay, what do we need in Gary Haim's office in terms of fire and life safety? We're trying to restaff Station 75 and finding funding sources for that. What do we need in Dean Haymore's office? But we're also looking at that internal monitoring basis or auditing basis that you referenced, yet again, through a function of somebody's office, whether it's more than likely the comptroller's, because we used to have a recorder auditor, you know, prior to establishing the comptroller. So I can assure the commission that it is being looked at. It's just we also made a pledge to you, and I think you made to your constituency, that says we're not going to balloon up, you know, anywhere we can. No new jobs are created in the county right now unless Austin Osborne signs off on it from a personnel basis, Hugh signs off on it from a fiscal basis, and I sign off from a logistical basis. So, you know, we are looking at it, I guess, long story short.
Very good. Ms. Dean.
Hey, Dean, Virginia City Highlands. I'd just like to make some comments about this. If my memory serves me correctly, and it's been better of late, there was only one item that dropped off the recommendation list for this year, and that was bank statements. Everything else has not been taken care of and resolved, and it is an ongoing, as Nicole pointed out, year after year after year issue. So it seems to me that Story County is not setting controls and procedures in place to correctly record things. One thing I really am curious about is that Hugh was discussing item number 2, and he is going on about how revenue is receipted into incorrect cash accounts and how this can happen and how easy it is to happen. But the auditor's recommendation refers to numerous instances where revenue was recorded in expenditure accounts. This is very, very different. We're not talking about different cash revenue accounts. We're talking about expenditure accounts. And I didn't see any comment at all that addressed how revenue is getting into expenditure accounts by our comptroller. And I think this is a concern when this happens, and this is why the auditors pointed this out. Also, although I've been out of the industry for a long time, you guys are headed in the wrong direction. You have more recommendations this year to improve than you did last year. That is not a positive direction to be heading in. We're getting more complicated here. You guys need to clean up your act and get some good detail information, because it's going to get more difficult, in my opinion, as time goes up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have an answer for the difference between the expenditure account and the revenue account?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because that's a disagreement that I have with Pringle CPA. If we have an item that obviously we have an expense item, and we have an expense item and we get a reimbursement for that item, okay? There's two theories of thought on this. One is you reduce the expense item, because it is not an expense item, particularly if it's with, let's say, the sheriff has an expenditure that's going to get reimbursed. Okay? So he makes the expenditure, A accounting method says that you can take that income from that reimbursement and put that against that expense account because that's really of zero function. Or you take that and you put that into the general fund revenue account. Now, Jerry doesn't get any credit for that. So, therefore, his budget's over by this expenditure account because he doesn't get credit for the income.
And these are not basic pre-audit discussions that have been
they are of the opinion that income should be in in-kind items and expense items should be in expense items. Now, unfortunately, sometimes this happens because when it is through the accounting system, we try and lock out everybody we can from recording anything in income accounts. Sometimes through either through a backdoor or whatever, people voucher things into an income account. This is found. When it's found, it's corrected. But sometimes that happens, and that's the reason for that.
Okay. Well, I will say in a lot of the recommendations, numerous appeared over and over, and these were follow-throughs from prior years where numerous mistakes, numerous duplicate entries. Thank you.
Well, and again, I'll clarify. Some of these will continue to occur regardless of whether we have an auditor or not. And I'll give you, again, a case in point. Gary, what were our tickets each to Japan? Okay. We sent three people to Japan to tour the Panasonic plants there at their request. That's $7,500 in unbudgeted monies. We did it under the condition that we will receive 100% reimbursement from Tesla, so it's cost neutral. And again, I support Hughes' methodology of saying we had to pay for the tickets. That was our deal. But we will be receiving, if we haven't received already, approximately $7,500 back. So he's run his methodology past me. I'm not an accountant. There are just sometimes differences of opinion between your accountant, your auditor, if you will, and how we function in a day-to-day world. It's not a mishandling of cash. It's a process, and it's a process that can be tracked easily back, you know, through the detail.
All right. Does anyone else have any discussion on today's audit report? Hearing none, move for a motion for approval of the auditor's recommendations.
I move to approve the auditor's recommendations pertaining to Story County Audit Report for the period end June 30th, 2014.
Just second your motion. Move and second to approve the auditor's recommendations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and motion carries. We've already heard item 18. At this time, we'll move on to item number 19. As for possible action, the Licensing Board second readings.
Commissioners, Community Development requests continuation of item L, Harris Gas, while we continue to work on plan review and permitting with them.
And all other items?
I'll go through those. I'll go through those. If you just continue L.
You want me to continue the first one? All right.
Just continue L, yes, please.
All right. This time I'm looking for a motion to continue item L, Harris Industrial Gases.
I make a motion to continue item L, Harris Industrial Gases.
Second to motion. We move to second to continue Harris Industrial Gases to future meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
And before we go through A through K, which I intend to name, I just kind of want to pause to reflect. And again, you know, budgets have been a legitimate key topic of discussion today and the audits. Items A through K are, by my count, 11 new businesses. I'm going to review them in a minute, but that's 11 new businesses that we probably didn't really budget for in the current year. And each of these businesses, assuming a standard fee, I believe we have a $100 application fee and I think a $100 out-of-county business license. So first year alone, we should be picking up close to $200 or $2,200 from these 11 businesses. And I'm going to go through them because the community development does recommend you approve items A through K, but I'm going to denote which ones of them I can assuredly contribute direct to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. Rosendin Electric, an electrical contractor out of San Jose, California, almost assuredly tri-related. Panda Restaurant Group, yep, they're in Sparks, but they're a caterer. I would bet that that is Tahoe Reno Industrial Center related, and more than likely Tesla. Pete Equipment Company from Paris, California, heavy equipment, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. Schuff Steel Company, a steel erector from Phoenix, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, and specific to Tesla. Sterling Crane Company, heavy lift facilities services out of Elko, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. Anning Johnson Company, City of Industry, a metal deck install, definitely Tesla, definitely Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. Sun Elope Solar from Sparks, maybe yes, maybe no, not sure. Safeway Services, a scaffolding equipment company from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, absolutely Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. And Ansbury Sign Craft, a sign manufacturer out of Reno, possibly yes, possibly no. So at the very least, 7 of the 11 are directly related to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center and probably most directly related to our project with Tesla. So, again, community development recommends approval of items A through K as they appear on your agenda.
That being said, looking for a motion for approval of A through K for the second licensing, licensing board second readings.
So I move to approve items A through K, licensing board second reading.
Second your motion. Move to second to approve A through K. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and the motion carries. All right, moving along now to item number 20 is public comment. Ms. Ward, come on down.
Hi.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. In the last just under a year, well, 8 months, we have approved a parking lot that's adjacent to the courthouse. We've bought a bank building. The VCTC bought a building slash building site at the Rail Commission Monday last week. Bill talked about the fact that Marshall was in negotiations with the freight depot, and that when, in order to be able to use some of the rail monies from the commission, that a project might be, you know, purchasing the freight depot, which was part of the original agreement anyway, but making another parking lot down there, so that's on the horizon. The VCTC also last week talked about looking at leasing a festival area, which may also lead to us being able to do different things. I'm not in agreement or disagreement with these items. That's not my point here. But it seems to me, and just looking at that, that we're doing stuff and just doing it. Where's the plan here? The bank was opportunistic. The festival area arose because we can't have our events at the Silverland anymore, and we really need more space anyway. The building for the VCTC was part, let's just say, opportunistic. Are we letting things happen to us and just doing things that happen to pop up that are good ideas, or do we actually have a plan? What's our plan here? These are all VC-centric because that's what I've seen. But what is your vision for what we're building here in Virginia City? What is this? Do you have a plan?
We do have a plan.
What is it? How does this fit into the plan? Can we see it?
Well, there's a lot of things. With when you talk about the VCTC, when it comes to tourism, that's exactly where they're at. They have to look to relocate because they're not being allowed to use the property that's been used in the last 50 years, basically, to put on special events.
But how does does this fit under an umbrella?
Well, if you ask me a question, please give me time to respond to it, Nicole. So if they're going to go ahead, if there's going to be roadblocks that are going to be put up, then other avenues have to be taken in order to make sure that these things are successful. We're not going to discuss each and every issue in a county commissioner's meeting because this isn't the place to discuss those items. These are to go ahead and talk to other businessmen, property owners, and you might say stakeholders, to find out what is going to work the best, you know, for the business community when it comes to things of tourism. It's not a general public issue. I mean, I don't think the general public is concerned about whether the camel races are held at the Silver Land or down by the old mill down there. So some things may be opportunistic, such as the bank building. That was a steal by anybody's means, down to anybody's standards in that. We have several department heads that would like to relocate for larger area. So we don't know exactly how it's going to be utilized yet, but when we've looked at other businesses that were available to purchase over the last couple of years, and some of those were worked on, and these things get worked on, you know, and behind closed doors to try to negotiate the best deal for the county that could possibly be made. If everything was to be negotiated in a public forum like this, it's a government issue now, and it's always looking for the deepest pockets. So if you're looking for us to go ahead and do our job for the county, that's how we do it. And we have to do it that way because we said, okay, we want to buy the building next door for a government services building. All of a sudden, everybody's going to want full market value. But if there's something that's offered out there at a reasonable price, or maybe can be even negotiated or discounted down a little bit, you want to make the deal first and then go ahead and make sure that everybody else is on the same page. If everybody else isn't on the same page, then that deal goes away.
Okay, but in buying the park, you're creating this parking lot and then creating another parking lot. Are you operating off of a plan somewhere that says we want Virginia City, and let's say the merchants, we want Virginia City to be able to accommodate X number of more tourists than they have nowhere else.
I understand that you haven't been to all the meetings over the course of the years to find out where everything is. This parking lot out here was in the works for several years, and the bottom fell out of it when the housing market went sky high. It was unaffordable, and then the market crashed, and the county didn't have the funds available to do the project. Now that we're coming into a little better times, the county did have the revenue, and this parking lot has been desperately needed, and everybody's testified on
it. I'm not arguing that.
When you're talking about the freight depot down below, that has been something that's been part of the rail plan for many years down there. The tunnel's been part of the plan, the extension of the rail line, and the depot. That's part of the puzzle putting it all together. The deal about buying the freight depot, if we can ever come to an agreement with the owners of the property, isn't simply to build another parking lot. Their parking lot is already there, and you're going to need adequate parking if you're going to have a terminus on E Street for the train or special events or whatever other opportunities are going to come to that freight depot. So if we're looking at buying the property, it's not to build another parking lot, although you cannot, if you talk to anybody, and I challenge anybody to walk the business district, you'll never have enough parking no matter where you go around the world. So,
yeah, I add something, too. I think, again, I know what you're looking for. And I think in many cases what is missing is that long-term participation. And I'm not criticizing. You know, I'm impressed that you come to meetings like you do and participate. But, for instance, let's talk about the freight depot down here. The county has a long, long historic history, if you will, of acquiring derelict buildings, buildings that are part of our history and that are, in essence, poised to either, you know, go away like American Flats Mill did. Quite frankly, but not like the Gold Hill Depot didn't, because of nonprofits like Kim Fager back there, and then we step in and help as well of our own accord. The Fourth Ward School, Liberty Engine, St. Mary's Arts Center, the district over here with Pipers. So I think, again, strategically, that depot perfectly fits, and especially when you integrate it into the tunnel project and again, more parking, quite frankly.
But that's the question I'm asking, Pat, and you hit it, is what is for Virginia City our strategic plan? Where are we going? Are we going to change anything? Are we going to keep things the same? We know transportation is a problem. Where is that as part of the plan? I'm asking a strategic plan, a strategic direction question. It's like the Christmas. Where's the Christmas tree on which to hang these ornaments?
Well, good question, and it will change. Yes, it will. Mm-hmm. Just like our infrastructure list will change. As time goes on, things will change. Some things will stay the same, but things will change. And in working towards coming to an agreement with the owners of the Freight Depot, if the county is able to purchase that building and go ahead and protect it, you know, from falling apart, because it is in need of a fire suppression system down there. It needs, anybody that drives by can see this in repair of some work. We're prepared. We'll take criticism for purchasing that building, because once again, people are going to step forward and say, "What are you guys doing getting in the real estate business?" We're not. We're in the business of preservation and restoration, of protecting the Comstock Historic District, because without what we have in Virginia City, we don't have anything. Sure, we have a nice industrial park that we're building at the north end of the county, but this is the center of the Comstock Lode. This is the history of the state of Nevada, and we have a responsibility, as city fathers, to say that we need to protect what we have left on the Comstock.
And I would suggest, Marshall, that you wouldn't get those questions if you articulated just as you just did.
Because
that is
because
the plan.
Of the fact that if you let too much information out there in the beginning, and my dad taught me this in business probably 40 years ago, if you show your hand, someone will backdoor you and they'll steal away from you what you're working to get. So some things you just have to go ahead and wait till the 11th hour to let people know what you're working on. And that's been done in business. You can ask, Lance has been at this a lot longer than I have, but that's how it's done in business, and we are running this government more like a business in here. And we're doing it, and we are doing it for the benefit of the county. There's no personal interest in buying a bank building or a railroad depot or a parking lot.
I'm not arguing the purchases.
You know,
I'm asking. There is
but I'm trying to I'm trying to get it across on why things are done the way they are.
Because, and I'm just saying that what you just said, you know, makes sense. What you just said that says we're here to protect, preserve, and defend our history, and the way that we do that is by buying these buildings so that they don't get torn down, and maybe at a future time to restore them. I think if you said that to our citizens, we'd go, oh, okay, and then you wouldn't get the kind of, well, what are you in the real
well,
estate
Well, you say the citizens, but Nicole, with all due respect, you're one of the few people that ask any of these questions.
Okay.
I don't get phone calls and letters. I don't get phone calls and letters from the constituents asking definitive questions like you're asking here. So either that shows that they think that we're doing a pretty good job doing it the way we are, or they don't care, or they're going to leave it up to you. So.
Well, I'm going to continue to ask the questions. So, as I said, I'm just...
And we'll give you the best answers we can at the appropriate time that we can.
That's fair. Thank you.
All right. Who's next? Gunther? Okay. Mr. Fager?
Kim Fagert, Gold Hill Historical Society.
Coming up on Thursday, the Gold Hill Historical Society is bringing 100 people to town that are involved in a convention that we've had planning for just about 4 years. It's a group called the Railroad Passenger Car Alliance. They own and operate private passenger cars. We are happy to bring them up here and share them with this community. Their trip on that day will involve running through the Nevada State Railroad Museum, stopping at the Lucerne Pit, where they'll be. A discussion of the operation,
hosted by Larry Martin from CMI. They'll proceed to the Crown Point Mill, where Clay Mitchell will give them a tour. They'll have lunch at the Goat Hill Hotel. The remaining time up here will be spent in the middle of the town participating in the businesses. The venue that they're hosted at is the Atlantis. The reason for that is because, one, it's one of the best properties in Reno, and two, the guy who owns the Atlantis, John Farahi, assisted the Gold Hill Historical Society quite some years back in trying to accomplish the reconstruction of the railroad down the hill. He had involvement in helping us pull $500,000 worth of material out of the middle of downtown Reno for that project. Unfortunately, that's the last thing that we're going to be able to do for this community after 30 years of working here, because of the results of what I like to refer to as the railroad cartel unceremoniously removing us from the venue. What I would like to say, though, is I appreciate, for instance, Mr. Gilman's letter earlier this year, an open letter that indicated that commissioners, especially Mr. Gilman, aren't forgetting who they really work for. I would be tickled to see other county officials take up that mantra. I'm encouraged by the idea that Mr. McGuffey and Ms. Langer have indicated that they want to work with me to settle the remaining issue that I have here. I'd like to think going forward from here that the county takes a little bit better tack on operations and issues like the Gold Hill Historical Society and their accomplishments. It's probably not going to be a mystery that we don't appreciate the thanks we were shown back in 2003. But I'd like to think that the events from there forward indicate that hubris and abuse are not watchwords for the county's operation, you know, as far as taking care of everybody's business. And from what I see, I'm looking forward to working with everybody involved in the future on whatever else we accomplish. That's pretty much about all I got to say, and it looks like it's all the time I got.
What date is that group coming up?
That would be this Thursday.
This Thursday?
22nd?
Yeah.
Was this the group that that Pierce had mentioned was a cleanup day at his depot as well, or is that a different organization?
It's solely under our auspices. We're the ones that planned this. We're the ones that brought the group here.
Okay.
We're the ones that scheduled it.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Hearing none, meeting's adjourned.